You're listening to Strong Runner Chick Radio, where our goal is to educate, empower, and connect female distance runners. If you enjoy this episode, be sure to leave a review on iTunes or any platform of your choosing, or share it with someone who might find this episode helpful. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the show. Special shout out to today's sponsor and the sponsor of this entire Health as a Foundation to Sports series, Athlete Blood Test. They provide individualized, athlete-specific blood analysis to discover your unique nutrition, training, and recovery needs. Join the thousands of enthusiasts, elites, and pros that have already used Athlete Blood Test to help reach their goals. Testing is easy. Simply go to athletebloodtest.com, choose your panel, and schedule an appointment at a conveniently located lab core. Whether you're running your first marathon or competing to win, we're cheering for you, and we can help you get there. Use code SRC15 for 15% off your first panel. Hello, Strong Runner Chicks. Welcome back to another episode of Strong Runner Chick Radio. We welcome all our listeners today to hear from Grace Corley, who is a registered yoga teacher and a mental health advocate, social justice advocate, and much, much more. So very excited to dive in today, Grace, and learn a bit more about both your own running journey and also your yoga journey and mental health and all of that and how it ties into the sport of running. So welcome to the show, Grace. Happy to have you. And I'd love for you to share a little bit about yourself as well.
Yeah, thank you so much, Megan. So I'm a registered yoga teacher, as you said. I'm in school right now for mental health counseling. I'm doing my master's in mental health counseling. So I have about a year left of that. And then licensure a couple years after that. So I'm here in Florida doing that at Rollins College. And yeah, I've been running for 12 years, which sounds weird when I say it, but it's a pretty long time, I guess. So yeah, I'm really excited to talk about yoga and running and mental health.
Love it. I think I'm also at year 12 and running, 12 or 13 somewhere, but it starts to feel like, am I old or have I just been running a long time? It's just funny. So I love it. I'd love to dive first into how you got started in running. What kind of led you down the path of getting into running?
Yeah, of course. So I started running in high school. I was a junior in high school. So I ran the last 2 years of my high school career, and I ran cross country. And it's funny because it's not something that I had really been drawn to initially, but the cross country team was kind of going around to the classrooms and talking to people about cross country, and it sounded really interesting, and the people that were there were super friendly, and I just thought, why not, you know? I thought it'd be good conditioning for tennis because I played tennis as well. So I joined the team, and I was really surprised by how quickly it felt like a family. I felt really comfortable there, and I wasn't the fastest runner. I'll say that I was kind of a middle of the pack kind of runner. But that didn't really bother me, and nobody seemed to mind that I wasn't the fastest runner. it felt like a family very quickly, and some of the people on that team became some of my closest friends. And I was always really drawn to the way that running made me feel really calm. And it just became a really good stress reliever over the course of those high school years and after. So, yeah.
I love hearing, how people get into the sport, and it's always nice when it's maybe a positive connotation. I mean, some of us get in it for various reasons, and, you know, maybe we're driven by a goal to be the fastest or to be the, you know, the best, but I think it's nice on the team. I was also kind of a mid-packer on my team, and I think just having that space where no one minds like what your pace is, and it's not like a sport like basketball or soccer where you're constantly in contact with others on your team, but you are connected in various ways. And like you said, the calming aspect as well is nice to pair. I imagine to pair with yoga too. So
yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Now, how did your running journey kind of evolve as you grew up and, you know, went on to college and beyond? Like, how has it sort of evolved wherever you've gone?
Yeah, absolutely. So after I started college, I ran, I kept up with running a little bit. I had some friends that I ran with when I started college. And then I developed an eating disorder, probably I'd say late high school, to be honest. And it didn't really start to snowball until I was in maybe the middle of undergrad. And I think at that time I started using running as like, I don't know. I think as runners, we start to get kind of hyper-focused on goals with running. And I think that was something that I really clung to at the time. So I got really motivated to just run every day for too long, probably. So I think I started using that as kind of, it got a little bit overboard. So I think when I was in my recovery, I made an active choice to not run at that time because I was recovering, and I'd kind of seen how I'd been able to incorporate that into my eating disorder, and I didn't like the way that that was going. So I made an active choice to stop running around that time, and I was around 20 or 21 then. And that's when I really got into yoga. And if I could talk about this now, I hope that's okay. But
yeah, absolutely.
So I started doing yoga when I was starting college, but I didn't really start doing it more religiously until I was in eating disorder recovery. And it was recommended to me by my therapist at the time as a way to reconnect my mind-body connection. So I feel like when you have an eating disorder, it's really tough to get your brain to go back to listening to your body, if that makes sense, because you're so practiced in ignoring what your body is telling you. Because your body, as you know, your body's mm-hmm. trained to, you know, to tell you when there's something wrong. And you just have to, when you have an eating disorder, you just kind of, you turn off that part of your brain that's telling you that there's something mm-hmm. wrong happening. So I feel like yoga is really instrumental in helping me learn how to reconnect those wires again, and to become aware of what's happening in my body and to listen to my body in that way. I started running again. I want to say I was probably 25. So I gave it a little bit of time just so I could make sure I knew like when I was pushing myself too far, if that makes sense. So right now I really dove back into it during the pandemic as well, back into running and to running more frequently. But I still kind of am very mindful of, I'm still very mindful of when I'm running, how long I'm running, and listening to what my body's telling.
Yeah, you put that so beautifully. I really appreciate you sharing and opening up. That's really tough to navigate those challenges, and particularly I think in eating disorder and whatever sport you're in or whatever sort of hobbies you had at the time, and how do you reintroduce that? I think you bring up a really good point there. I'd love to dive into we have so many listeners too that reach out and they are struggling with an eating disorder or trying to get back into running after and reintroduce it. And it's like, how do you do that in sort of a healthy way? And we'll get there. I wanted to start too by sort of posing the question or kind of getting listeners to think about, you know, does the running culture contribute to eating disorders, to maybe exacerbating the problem, or can they be fed through, and I don't mean this in any literal term, but like, can an eating disorder further be sort of worsened by this sport of running? I know some people think, or maybe for themselves personally, running has actually contributed to the cause of that. Or maybe it's just a mechanism for making it a little worse. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about that or how, and also along those lines, if you do, like, how do you see running now as maybe something that could be healthy for you or like nourishing in a good way?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up actually, because I hear from a lot of people in the running community and people that I've met over the years that they've also struggled with eating disorders and they also happen to run. So I'm sure that there is some kind of connection there, to be honest. And I think also the way that running, like when you have a goal that you're training for, like say you're training for a half marathon, it's like a very strict, like 12-week plan, you know, and you have to do it and you have to run. And so like, I feel like runners learn to build like a lot of discipline over time. And sometimes that discipline can kind of overrule listening to your body. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that it's really interesting that you bring that up for that reason.
Yeah. Yeah. When you said it's like a 12-week plan, I'm almost like, are training plans now like diets? No, I don't want to liken them to that, but it seems so structured and like it can become so rigid where you don't want to miss a day. And sorry, I'm getting weird light on my face. If anyone's, no one's going to see this but you, but it's like, I have rays of light on my face. Anyway, so yeah, what I'm trying to get to, I guess, is like that running can easily, anything can become unhealthy or maybe not great for us when we're taking it too literally and not, I don't know. Yeah. I just, along those lines, I had a friend apologize to me the other day for cutting our run short. And I was like, you never have to apologize for that. Like I, you know, and it was a mutual decision too. I was totally okay with it, but she felt like, oh, I didn't hit, you know, my goal for the day. And I feel bad. I don't want you to think I'm copping out. And I just thought, oh gosh, like that's not how I want running to be. It's you listen to your body and maybe you go less than if you had 10 or 12 miles planned and we went 10, that's totally okay. And I'm not disappointed even if we went 1 mile, you know, it's just, I guess kind of something to figure out for yourself and for your sport or hobbies of how to navigate that. Now, when it comes to yoga, what is different? I'm curious, like what is, and maybe we don't have to switch gears right away, but like, how was that different for you?
What do you mean? How different? How? Sorry.
I guess different in the way of like when it comes to yoga and practicing yoga. Again, could someone become wrapped up in that where they have to do 30 minutes a day of a certain routine, or is there a way that to you yoga is sort of different? And again, speaking for yourself personally, right? How it was different for you from running?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good question. So I absolutely think that it is possible to go a little bit overboard in that sense as well. But I think that for me, it is a matter of just listening to my body and knowing my limits. So I like that with yoga and with meditation as well, you don't have to plan the whole, you know, 30-minute session, 60-minute session. You can really just do 3 minutes, 5 minutes here and there, if that's all you can do for that day or that's all you want to do that day. And I've really just kind of made that my practice. So I do a little bit every day, but some days it's 30 minutes, some days it's literally 5 minutes. So I think that that's the way that I've found to find balance with that.
Yeah. So a little bit more of a flexible approach in that sense.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That. Yeah. And then when it ties in with yoga and mental health, are there any overlaps that you've seen, again, either for yourself or just in a broader sense?
Yeah. So in my training, I took a course on neuroscience last summer, and we talked a lot about how movement in general has a way of positively benefiting your brain in that it builds like new neural pathways. So it contributes to neuroplasticity and the idea that when you do something active, it probably not explaining this right. Sorry.
Oh, it's totally fine.
I knew that was
it's hard to explain neuroscience in any fashion or form. So I'm like, go for it. You can do a better job than me.
Yeah, so it forms new neural pathways and it's really good for your brain health, basically. So yeah. At any age, you can learn something new. And when you're learning something new, it makes it easier to Yeah, I'm not explaining this right. I'm just going to drop it.
Oh,
But
it's
really
totally
good for
fine.
your brain.
Yes, I have heard the research. We will point to research in the show notes too. So, yeah.
And in my personal experience, I found that it helps a lot with, I think a lot of us know that it's really good for stress reduction. It boosts your mood. When I've been teaching yoga classes, I've seen people come in and you can tell that they just came back from sitting in traffic and they're tired, and then they sit down and you can just see the shift, you know, and it's really cool to see, I think.
Yeah.
And then just the Shavasana at the end and they're like out cold. So it's really yeah. nice to see the shift of people really settling into that space and slowing down the brain and slowing down the processes. It's really cool.
Yeah. So. I always think it's interesting. Like, when do you have a time of day you practice yoga?
Usually morning or evening.
Yeah. See, mm-hmm. me too. I usually do like a wind down end of day or morning, mm-hmm. start your day off with intention. But I used to do for a little while at a job I had, we would do yoga. It wasn't in the office. We would actually, which I loved, you could leave the building, walk to a yoga studio just down the street, do yoga, come back. And I just noticed, whoa, like what a tremendous difference that had from a hectic kind of morning, rushed, all that kind of thing. And then you go to mm-hmm. yoga and you come back. And I just really noticed that difference. I think it was like Wednesdays we'd go. So it was like, oh, I love Wednesdays, because Wednesdays, you know, the second half of the day, just I approach with such different intention. And that was cool to see sometimes, like if you try something different, like whether it's running at a different time of day or yoga or a practice you have, how does that affect the way you go about the rest of your day or evening or the day after, you know, does that have an effect? So just food for thought.
Absolutely. That's true. Yeah. And I really like that you brought the presence aspect to mm-hmm. it as well, because yeah, just like when you have that, and you cultivate that awareness during yoga, and then you come back to the rest of your day, you feel a lot more present in what you're doing, and you tend to feel a lot more calm too. So yeah. That's very cool. Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations for someone that's listening that maybe has tried a yoga class or two or tried meditating? And I don't know that we have to talk meditating. Sometimes I bring that in because I feel like Shavasana kind of gets you in that state. Yeah. But any sort of mindfulness or yoga type routine or practice, maybe tips you have or favorite things that helped you kind of get started and form the habit?
Absolutely. Yeah. A thing that I hear a lot is that they think that it's about stopping your thoughts or like stopping your thoughts or making the thoughts kind of go away. But it's really just about cultivating an awareness of yourself and your breath. So I would say start there and just, you know, just start. I think it's really easy to get caught up in what's going to happen when you're sitting and, oh, I'm going to get distracted or I'm going to think about this and that. And it's okay if you think about this and that. It's really just kind of an awareness that you're thinking. So I would just say focusing on your breath and what's happening in your body. And just start with a minute, you know. Yeah. I think that's a really easy way to start. Just do a minute every day and work your way up if you feel like it.
Mm-hmm. Now for you, has this been more of like a personal practice? Do you try any guided meditations or do you go to classes at all that have helped you?
So I started with Headspace. I want to say maybe 5 years ago, and I still use Headspace. I really love it. When I was living in Tampa during my undergrad, I started going to a meditation center there. So I would go to meditation about twice a week for a couple of hours. You don't have to do that to meditate, I'll say, but like, I really liked it as like a, you know, a good way to like interrupt my week and to end my week really well. So that just kind of became a routine for me. But where I'm at right now, I've found myself a lot more busy with grad school. So I just kind of work it in where I can with Headspace. So
yeah. Ah, love it. And I'd encourage folks, like if you have tried it on your own and it's been challenging. I know what helped me initially kind of get in the habit of both yoga and meditation was getting myself to a class and, yes. you know, doing this in the comfort of others. And I know it can be intimidating at first, but closing your eyes and kind of being there with other people who were all in the same place in some sense, like we've all come from elsewhere and we're here together to meditate. It's similar to a group run, right? And that like getting started with it can get you over the hurdle and it can kind of keep you going. And I know that's something I've kind of lost during COVID, has not been going to the group format, but if you can do so safely, you know, maybe try that or, you know, find a teacher you really jive with that speaks to you or even someone like I think Shel Hamilton and Meditation Minis has been my go-to for a while on Spotify. And then I use Calm as well, but Headspace, I love the Headspace. You get some nice accents on there as well.
Yes, so. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything more on that? I guess like books you've read, or I'm sure you're a slew of information and knowledge, but any kind of favorites that you often recommend to other folks that want to get more into yoga or meditating?
Yeah, I've been reading Thich Nhat Hanh pretty much since I started meditating, like when I started doing yoga like 10 plus years ago. So I find his content really accessible, very easy to read and very relatable. I know he just passed away like pretty recently, but he has a really awesome collection of books and audiobooks too, if that's your thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. I have not heard of, like, I haven't really checked him out. So thank you.
Yeah. He's a Buddhist monk, or he was a Buddhist monk. And yeah, I find his content really, really wonderful. So yeah. I have a ton of his books here.
Oh, love it. Actually, I did want to ask you this. So like along the lines of yoga, when we're talking about health and, you know, in this series, it's really like, how is this a foundation for us? What do you see as maybe any other health benefits or healing benefits from the practice of doing yoga?
Yeah. Let me see, something that I haven't mentioned.
We've covered a lot of them, haven't we?
Yeah, that's true. We kind
it's like, if you don't already have all the benefits, there's a lot. Yeah.
I mean, I would say too, emotional regulation, I feel like is one that maybe isn't talked about a lot, but one that I've seen for myself and for other people as well. Just the ability to like, to weather the emotions of life a lot easier, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that we go through a lot of emotions in the course of a day and sometimes it's really easy to get caught up in them. But when you're able to take a moment to realize what you're feeling and to breathe through it, I hope that doesn't sound cheesy, but
no, not at all. That's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that can be really, I feel like it can be really revolutionary, honestly, because you feel more in control of your emotions than your emotions are controlling you, sort of thing.
Yeah. So, that's powerful. Yeah. I kind of feel like for anyone that either struggles with like anxiety or nervousness or kind of I get easily like hyped up about things. It kind of calms you down, settles you, you know, brings you back to that place. Or if you feel like your emotions sometimes control you, you know, how can you become more of a master of emotion and thinking through? Yeah. Like you said, self-regulation, that is such a underrated, right? Term that I just don't hear enough about that is so important and can affect the world around you and others too. So yeah,
I agree.
It's a good one. You have such a calming presence too. I feel like you do a lot of yoga and meditate. Yeah. So yeah, it's proof that I think it's like outwardly apparent, you know, and your presence that you practice as well. Yeah. Anything more? I guess like, I'm curious if you have taught or teach currently, what your favorite part of teaching yoga is.
Let me see. I haven't taught in about a year, to be honest, just because of the pandemic stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was doing some things online for a while and then things got kind of busy with school. Yeah. So then I stopped doing that. But I think my favorite part is hearing people's experiences of the practice after after the practice. If people tell me that this was the best part of their week, or that they felt like they could think, they could hear their thoughts, you know, in like a way that they weren't able to before. I just really like hearing the way that moment brought some clarity to their lives. And that's been the most special part for me, I think.
Oh, I love that. As you're saying that, I'm like, I need to get back into teaching. For me, it's been like two and a half years. So a little rusty, but it's there. Yeah, I need to maybe take another course, or, you know, there's so many different avenues too, even within yoga. What type do you teach? You know, what kind of path do you want to go down? Is there any, I guess anything that you're learning either through mental health practice, like through your licensure practice, or through yoga, that you're kind of hoping to gain more information on, or that maybe you want to share, like a learning or a teaching? You shared quite a bit already, but neuroscience, but anything you're currently learning or really fascinated by?
Well, I took a training last year with the organization Love Your Brain. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
I have not heard of that one, no.
Yeah, so they teach yoga for the traumatic brain injury community. So folks that are affected by traumatic brain injury and their families or their loved ones. And they offer a free series for those individuals to come and practice yoga in an accessible and a trauma-informed environment. So I took this training to be a teacher in that series. Hopefully I'll get a chance to do that soon. But with the pandemic, I guess you never know. So yeah. But I was really fascinated to learn more about the ways that yoga can help the traumatic brain injury community. And I felt like traumatic brain injury is something that's not really talked about, but I was really surprised to see how prevalent it is. So yeah, I thought that was really interesting. And I'm also trained in trauma-informed yoga. So I really want to lead more classes with people that are struggling with mental illness or with traumatic brain injury, or anything where they really think that they aren't welcome in the yoga community, if that makes sense.
Oh, I love that. And that kind of leads me to my next question about the running community and what we can do better in that sense. I feel like yoga, I guess, and again, everyone's biased to their own opinion, but I think yoga compared to running, at least for me and maybe for others I've witnessed, has maybe been a little more inclusive or a little more welcoming. And maybe that's just the teacher actually says it, that you are welcome here oftentimes, or they really try to make an effort, you know, whereas in running, I don't know that that's always the case. So I wanted to ask, when it comes to, you know, inclusivity, representation, diversity in the sport of running, where do you see we have the most potential to improve? And you can critique for yoga as well, if you are so inclined. Yeah. You're welcome to speak for that too.
Absolutely. I think I'll comment on the yoga part first. Mm-hmm. So I really think that even though a lot of teachers will say that everyone is welcome, I think it's really an aspect of like what you're seeing in the room as well when you walk into a yoga studio, as far as accessibility and visibility of different bodies, different races, different ethnicities, different abilities. I think that that's kind of an aspect where, I don't know. Yeah, I think that that's really a thing that is there. And you know.
I agree with you. I mean, yeah. I didn't mean to speak blindly, but I think
compared to running, not at all, in my experience.
Yeah. But yeah, I do think when I look around the yoga room, you know, there's not a lot of in a typical class that I see. And so, yeah.
Right.
Work to be done.
Yeah. So I think that that's an area that yoga really has to grow to. I'm seeing it a little bit more. I've been seeing things on like TikTok and Instagram of people trying to bring some more awareness to diversity in yoga. And in running too, I'll say I'm really passionate about accessibility and visibility in running as well. So I've always really kind of resented the expression that to run, all you need is a pair of shoes and you can just go outside and run. Like, I know that's not verbatim what it is, but it's something like that, right? So I think that it's really difficult for, so I'll say that there's a huge financial barrier. I'll start there, because I think that to run safely and free of injury is kind of expensive. You have to have the right shoes, which can cost like $200 to $300. And the right gear to run in all types of weather. And the races and the events kind of adds up too, you know?
Yeah.
I hadn't quite realized it until I like was in a position where I had to start paying for my own races, and mm-hmm. I got older and I was like, oh, this is pretty expensive. So I'd say there's that, and also just like visibility aspects that we talked about with yoga, right? So the kind of people that you see at the lineup as well. So yeah, and I really feel like safety is an issue as well for running. If you aren't white presenting or male presenting, I think it can be really difficult to run outside. Yeah, I mean, we saw in the last couple of years, the thing with Ahmaud Arbery and other issues that we've seen with people of color being targeted just for being outside. Yeah. And also with women and trans individuals that are openly trans. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really tough as well. Because when you go outside, you're kind of making an active choice, you know, yeah. And you have to kind of consider things that nobody should have to consider when they're just trying to put themselves in a good state of mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Along the lines of there's so much here to unpack. And I think to better understand, you know, where can we as individuals, as communities start to take action and really intentional and long-term. Right. And I know you wrote a piece on, you write for Watermark. So I wanted to call mm-hmm. that out as well and make sure that's highlighted. But you did write a piece on sort of reflecting, I think, intersectional advocacy 1 year later, you know, this year, looking mm-hmm. back on, then it stopped, right? We had this big cusp of change and then it just stopped. And like, why? What happened and why? And I didn't know if you had any more to share on that. Like, why did this just all of a sudden it just seems like this momentum towards change has maybe gotten stagnant. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate to see that happen and to see brands maybe kind of forgetting what they had intended upon, or communities, and like, how can we keep that forefront or state of mind?
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. I'm still trying to answer that question for myself as far as yeah. why everything just kind of halted. I think for a moment, there were a lot of people that were really sincere about wanting to create change. And then I think that, I don't want to say all the businesses are like this, but like, you know, capitalism. I think yeah. that people just kind of, the businesses kind of hooked on to the idea that this is what people care about. And so they tried to put out more content that was mm-hmm. geared toward that. And I think it created this sense that things are going to start changing because more people care. But I think that, I don't know, I hate to kind of say that it kind of became a trend for a while to be, yeah. you know, intersectional and to want to change things. But
yeah,
I think once reality kind of set in, it just kind of floated away. And then, you know, the rest of us that are kind of in that position where we need people to advocate for us, just kind of lost that. And I don't know, I think it's really hard to communicate how devastating that was to see. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know. I just kind of hope that, yeah, I don't know. I wish I had a better.
No, better, I mean, you don't have to have the answer. I think you bring up just an excellent point that we need to think about and consider. And mm-hmm. it seems almost like the trend per se was like the easy part, or not that it's easy, but it's a small lift maybe for brands to start to talk about it or to start to shed light on it. But what does it take, right? It's going to take a lot more than just a small little bit of something to spark change and to continue. And it's not that you light a match and you call it good. It's like, we really have to do more than that and make that lasting to continue. Yeah.
Yeah. And I realized too, that I just want to acknowledge that, yeah, there's a lot of discomfort in acknowledging things that, that are unjust, but I feel like there's a huge benefit on the side of that discomfort, you know, like if you can really dig into that, I think it's worth it for sure. So I just want to say that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. And I kind of wanted to jump back to, I know you're really passionate about safety, as am I. I think that's something we don't often consider. You may need to buy pepper spray, headlamp, right? Like a lot Absolutely. More in your running toolkit, especially if you're alone and, you know, identify as a non-cis white male, you know, it's just like, yeah, you're at higher risk. Are there any things that you've done maybe personally or that you recommend to friends getting started in running to feel a little safer, to actually take the step towards running safely?
Mm-hmm. I would say first, just if you're running outside, letting someone know where you're going and when you expect to be back, whether you live with somebody or if it's somebody that you can text and just let them know, hey, I'm going out. I'm going to be back around 7:30. And if you don't hear from me, you know, give me a call or shoot me a text or something like that. I think that's a good one. And what else? I look up routes and I try to become familiar with when the sun sets on that side of town, things like that, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
And to just know when it's a busy time, when it's a not busy time, mm-hmm. And to just kind of become familiar with things like that.
Yeah.
That's been what's been working for me, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So a few simple steps that one, and again, that's personal. I know we could do a lot as a community or as a whole community to do, to make mm-hmm. others feel more, to make them feel safer, or to develop safe paths and well-lit, you know, sidewalks and, yeah. Is there anything more, I guess, on that topic that you feel is important to kind of dive into?
Yeah. I just wanted to mention also kind of diversifying your feed, in that you're viewing content that is not monolithic. So as far as running or yoga or whatever sport you're interested in, seeking out accounts that aren't monolithic, you know. So I like personally, I really like Diversely Run, which is run by Carolyn Stew. Have you heard of that?
Yes. Yeah. Awesome. Love Carolyn. Shout out to Carolyn.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah. So I really like that page. And if you follow her and some of the runners on there, I think it's a really good way to see runners from different backgrounds, and how they've, you know, how they've kind of persevered through, you know, the struggles that they've had in the running community and otherwise. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, I wrote it down for 1 second.
Go for it.
Yeah. Still I Run as well. I really like the organization. Yeah. They have chapters in a few different cities, and they also have, they have a scholarship program where they give a scholarship to someone that needs running resources, basically. So I think they offer coaching, they offer gear as well if you need running gear, and yeah, things like that. So they have a lot of running resources, running and mental health resources on their website. So I think that's really cool.
Love that. Thank you. I was trying to recall for yoga for all bodies. That's one woman, Natalia, who does yoga for all bodies. I've heard good things about that, but there was one other yoga account and I'm not going to think of it now. Yoga for all humans, yoga for all. No, maybe we'll think of it and put it in the show notes, but there was a yoga account I've been following that's been posting similar to Diversity Run on the front of just showcasing different bodies that all bodies can fit in a yoga room or in a class and be part of the community. So I really like that as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any favorite yoga accounts, I guess, on that front? For you?
I don't know off the top of my head, to be honest. I was following a lot for a while, and then my feed got very like, I'm going to use that word again, monolithic. I felt like I was seeing a lot of the same content and a lot of the same bodies. So I kind of took a break from that for a little bit. So I'll have to do some work to see if I can find some more that are more diverse accounts. But I know that there is one that I'm a part of. Oh gosh, I didn't write it down, so I might not remember. But I'll tell you afterwards, and I'll look it up.
Sounds good.
I think it's called Black Women's Yoga Collective.
Oh, okay.
One that I follow. Yeah. And I know the person that runs it, and she, she's really great. So she does a lot of work with diverse identities and the yoga community. So, I'll share that with you after if I can.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll look that up as well.
Okay.
Wonderful. Thanks. And you have one as well. You have an account.
I do have an account. Yeah. Yes.
Well, we can always wait to share that if you want to at the end.
Okay.
Yeah. I did want to switch gears a little bit into your personal journey and sort of what led you. I don't even know that we got to this question of kind of what led you into mental health as a profession.
Oh yeah,
like how to choose that. So we'll jump back there and then sort of where you want to go with it.
Okay, that sounds good. So let me see. I was drawn to the field by my own struggles with mental health, I'll say. I think that, you know, I think it's hard for, I mean, I don't know if people think about this, but I used to think about this of whether my therapist had gone through mental health issues. Yeah. And, but yeah, I used to think that would be a barrier for me entering the profession, but I was pretty surprised to learn that most mental health therapists have had mental health issues in the past. But anyway, yeah. So I was drawn to the field by my own struggles, and the way that, that it really helped me. I started doing therapy when I was 18. And I'm still in therapy, different therapist, different city, but still in therapy. and I really find that it can be helpful for really anybody in any walk of life. And I found something really fulfilling in helping people recognize the strength that's already within themselves. And I think that's pretty cool, you know? Yeah, I have a lot of helping professionals in my family, and I think I've always just been drawn to ways that I could help people, and I feel that my cup is really filled by helping others. So, I'm really passionate about myself.
What a way to do it! And plus, with your yoga background and trauma-informed approach, it's like, the world needs you. Like, when are you in business?
<Thank you.
laughs> get on the wait list, I guess, if you're listening, right? Do you have a sort of like a graduation timeline in place already, or a time when you'll?
I do. I'm starting my internship to finish up the program. My internship starts in August of this year, and then I graduate in the spring in May next year, 2023. So, so I'm here. I'm in Florida. I'm in Orlando.
Nice. Well, again, probably you get this all the time, or this is a question I ask because I've not really had luck in this area, but I wondered if, and I have a lot of friends that are in therapy and share that openly, which I appreciate, but they seem to have just found the perfect therapist. And I'm here going like, how do you go about finding, you know, a therapist? Is it sort of a process that, you know, maybe has taken you some no's or some, this isn't going to work, let me try someone else? Or is it kind of, how do you go about that or recommend that someone do that if they're listening in?
Oh, awesome. I'm so glad you asked that question. It's definitely a process. I would say that if a therapist is not working for you for whatever reason, it's okay to find a new therapist. you definitely have permission to find a new therapist. And your therapist is, they're inclined to help you find a new one if you're not working for them. So if you, I mean, they're supposed to, you know, if you tell them that something isn't working and you'd like to find a new therapist, they're inclined to help you come up with a list of referrals. That is in the code of ethics for them to help you find a new one. So hopefully they're doing that. but if not, yeah, you can definitely find a new therapist and know that it is a process. The first one you find may not be the right one for you. And know that that's okay. That's typical. So yeah, I hear from people sometimes that they had a bad experience with a therapist and then they've kind of sworn off therapy and they're like, well, that's it. They must all be terrible. But I promise yeah. that there's someone out there for everyone. Yeah. And I really think that sometimes it can take a little bit longer to find the right fit sometimes, but once you do, it can be a really special thing.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. Yeah, I do think it's, I mean, maybe like finding a running coach or a yoga teacher you jive with or a physical therapist. But again, physical therapy might be different because they're working on your physical body versus, you know, therapist in the mental emotional sense is probably a lot deeper of a need than just, hey, can you adjust this? Can you, you know, help me with my, but, you know, again, it could be finding the right fit is definitely an important process. Like you noted. Mm-hmm. So thank you for the tips. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just want to say one more thing on that as well. That it's okay to ask questions of your therapist. When you first meet with them, they might ask you if you have questions for them and feel free to ask them anything that you feel is important. Because they're really there to meet your need. Mm-hmm. I think it's important that you make sure that they're meeting your needs. And if they aren't, or if you don't feel like you can be honest with your therapist, then you should probably look for someone else.
Yes. Good words of wisdom. Indeed. Thank you for sharing. That's really helpful, I think, for those out there. Well, I know we're coming to kind of our closing questions here. I wanted to see if there was anything else. Oh, I wanted to ask you kind of where you hope to evolve in terms of your career as a therapist or future therapist, as a yoga practitioner, where you'd like to go. And maybe if you want to mention running too, I welcome that as well. If you want to mention what you're up to or where you're hoping to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So let's see, when I graduate, my partner lives in Sarasota. So I'm going to move over to Sarasota. Mm-hmm. And right now I'm on the family and relationship therapy track. So I'm going to pursue marriage and family therapy in addition to being an LMHC. So I'm hoping to work with individuals, couples, families. I identify as queer, so I really would like to be able to work with the queer community, the trans mm-hmm. community in some capacity. That's something that's really important to me. What else? As far as yoga, I'd really like to start teaching yoga more. Hopefully teach in addition to being a therapist. We'll see how that works. So there's that. And with running, running is going pretty well. I'm still trying to like rebuild. I did have an eating disorder relapse during the pandemic. So I started working with a dietitian and working with my therapist to kind of get back on board with my relationship with food and with running. So that's been going well. And I've just kind of been inching back into running very slowly, but it's coming along. I actually need to have this surgery for my feet. So I am going to be buying some new running shoes and see if that will hopefully put off surgery a little bit longer. I'm in the market for maybe some Hokas or some Ultras or something like that. I've heard those are good for support. I'm hoping to start training for a half marathon soon. I was really wanting to do that before and I was having a lot of pain. So I had to stop for a little bit. So yeah, hopefully a half marathon by the end of this year is in my books.
Yay. That's a lot to look forward to. I'm excited for you. Yeah.
Thank you.
And if you're looking at Hokas and Ultras, I will say, like my unsolicited advice here, but I love Hokas. I'm in Hokas now. I used to be an Ultra, only run in Ultras. And while I love Ultras, I love them in other ways, not for long runs, not for much over, I don't know, 10 miles now, 15. But I noticed during long stuff, long runs, races, they just didn't hold up on the Achilles, I guess, with the whole zero drop. So they'll build some strong calves since you have, you know, no lift. But Hoka Speed Goats and Hoka One One, I guess that's what they're called. Clifton's, Bondi's, there's a bunch. I run in the Clifton's on the roads. Those are nice.
Okay. Those are the ones I was looking at. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I named my dog after them. I love them so much. So fun fact, awesome. Clifton, that's his name, like Clifford. But yeah, they're my most trusty road shoe, I would say. Trusty as in like last a long time and yeah, continued over the years. So I hope you find a good pair. Yeah.
Thank you.
We're treating Hoka, finding a shoe is like finding a therapist, maybe. It's
For sure. Yeah.
So I wish you the best. Hope it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of along the lines of what is bringing you joy in life. Those are some positive things, but anything else that maybe in the day to day that you're finding joy in?
Yeah. I've really been branching out with my movement. I think for a really long time, I was just doing yoga and running and that was all I did. But I've really been branching out with strength training more. I started rollerblading and I got a bike pretty recently. I was biking before, but I haven't biked consistently since I was pretty young. So I really wanted to start biking again more. So I'm finding joy in that, finding other ways to move my body besides what I'm used to. And in that learning curve of like trying something new again after a long time and not being great at it, but doing it anyway. So,
well, it's very fitting that your bike is right behind you. It sounds like a nice way to be around Florida, especially this time of year or any time for that matter. But, and rollerblading, how fun. I always feel like that builds ankle mobility or it helps, I don't know, helps with my ankle strength. I notice the ankles kind of aren't super happy the next day, but in a good way, it's like, oh, I should do this more. It's fun. Yeah. Very cool. Thanks for sharing. Yeah. I love all those things. So we have a couple more as we kind of wrap up here. One question that we ask all of our guests is looking back, maybe on a hard time in life or on those, you know, 18 to 20 years, those really developmental years, what advice would you give to your younger self?
I would say comparison is the thief of joy. That's what I would say. Comparison is really hard to stop doing. But I would tell myself to stop comparing myself to others because it's, you know, very counterproductive. And especially, you know, not just in life, but in running as well. I think it's really easy to get caught up in paces. When I was 18, I didn't really care about what pace I was running at, but now that I'm 27, I'm always seeing everyone's paces on my Strava and on Instagram, and I'm like, oh, I wish I could run at that pace, you know. So I think it's a work in progress, but it's something that I'm constantly reminding myself of lately. Yeah. So,
oh, good one. Always tough, tougher to practice. Yeah, very good. Last question that we have for you, and you can kind of take this however you want, because strong runner chick doesn't apply to everyone or doesn't jive with everyone, but what does being a strong runner chick mean to you? Or maybe a strong yogi, strong human, you know, however you want to take that to mean.
Yeah, I think it means being resilient and when things get hard to keep going. Even when you know that when you want to give up, when you don't want to do it, keep doing the thing. Yeah.
Keep doing the thing. Keep pressing on. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thank you so, so much, Grace, for joining me for the show today. It was a joy to chat with you. I wanted to open up the floor to how listeners can connect with you. And if there's any lasting message you want to share or a shout out you want to give, anything to kind of close us off.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me for once. Let me see. My Instagram handle is Grace_Corley with a K. And what else do I want to say? I mean, I would really just leave listeners with do something for yourself today as far as self-care. And self-care doesn't have to mean, you know, planning a whole routine. It can really just be taking 5 seconds to take a few deep breaths or going for a walk or playing with your dog outside. Really anything that is going to fill your cup. So, yeah.
Yes, that is so, I just love that. That's such a nice thing to be left with, to do some self-care. Didn't even ask you the question about self-care, but I think it's super important. And like, what is it and how do we do it? And you just summed it up really well there. So thank you for joining us and for sharing your wisdom with the community. We appreciate it. So
yeah, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Strong Runner Chicks, and those who tuned into this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. All right.
Thanks for listening to the Strong Runner Chicks Radio. Do us a favor and leave a review in iTunes to help spread awareness and foster the SRC community. Additionally, make sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Strong Run Chicks.